Hour number two of the program here. Welcome on in to the 7 p.m. hour. Braves and Milwaukee Brewers will get underway in just a few minutes. If you are the three remaining Braves fans out there that actually care, I'll keep you updated throughout the evening. Before we get to some true-false questions, I rarely do this. I know nobody cares about where I'm from. Nobody cares about New York. And you shouldn't. It's Atlanta, and I'm here to talk Atlanta sports with you. But when it makes the national news, and this was just downright funny. Oren, did you see the video that went viral today from the Giants about the video that they made celebrating the 10-year anniversary about a caller to our sister station in New York, WFAN, to Mike Francesa 10 years ago? About the caller Dan in Warwick. So the Giants made a video, because the call was about the Giants. So the Giants made a commemorative video.
The actual team official Twitter account. The
team official Twitter account made a video featuring Mike Francesa, Eli Manning, Sean O'Hara, their Hall of Fame center. And I actually, this is the sad state of affairs about the San Francisco Giants. Two of their players that I don't actually know, but they were in the
vicinity of the video being
right.
shot.
So here's the premise of what happened. 10 years ago on this day, somebody called in to Mike Francesa's show on WFAN. And if you were familiar with the premise of his show, not to call out this style of show or anyone who does such a show, but his show was as followed. He came on the air, did a 12 to 15 minute monologue, and then took calls for four straight hours every single day. That was his style of show. After he and Chris Russo, the legendary Mike and the Mad Dog, split up, Chris Russo went to Sirius, where he still is, and Mike remained on WFAN in afternoons. And that was his show. So he took any and every call that came through. And the screeners, so whoever was doing your job at the time, Oren, had a very difficult job, because he would mow through calls like they were going out of style. So there was very little time to screen out some of the jokesters.
And you couldn't really tell, because I could just say my name is so-and-so from Yonkers.
Yeah,
and I'd be a real person.
Right, I'm Oren from Atlanta, and I want to talk about the Yankees. And that was good enough to get you through the call screening process. So a lot of the time he would get trolled. And this famous caller, Dan in Warwick, 10 years ago today, called the fan and asked the following question. Hey, Mike, Dan in Warwick, do you know if whenever the San Francisco Giants come to New York to play the Mets, do they and members of the New York Giants get together and go out to dinner to commemorate the fact that the San Francisco Giants used to be in New York, called the Giants, 100 years ago? And during the call, Mike went off for a two-minute tangent, like, what are you talking about? They're not related at all.
He looks genuinely all the time confused. Yeah.
He just has no idea. He's like,
not in the joke at all.
And then at the end, he's like, man, that guy sounded serious too. I don't think he was joking around. That is one of the strangest phone calls I've ever gotten in my 25 years of doing sports radio. So to commemorate that, the New York Giants got together with the San Francisco Giants, and they made a video. And it's in the Giants facility in like a ballroom. And Mike Francesa is walking down the hallway, and he opens up a door. And he sees Sean O'Hara, Eli Manning, two New York Giants Hall of Famers, sitting across the table from two San Francisco Giant players having lunch. And Mike walks in the door, and he goes, huh, I guess they do really get together when they come into town. And then Sean O'Hara blows one of those like party whistles that goes, and then Eli Manning goes, hey, maybe next year we should go have a picnic. And the funny part about that is, at the end of the call, Mike goes, yeah, you know what? You know what I actually hear that they do? They go to Hackensack, New Jersey, and they have a picnic every single year. And they reference that in the video. So I just, all that to say, that is a great job by the New York Giants. That would be like the Falcons taking one of, you know, Dukes and Bell's legendary calls from, you know, Mel or somebody like that, and actually turning it into a skit on their official Twitter account. So that was expertly done to commemorate the 10-year anniversary of the caller that called into Mike Francesa's show. Again, normally I don't dive into New York stuff, but this has gone absolutely viral. It's got well over 2 million views on Twitter, and it's on ESPN.com and the whole thing and the like. So that was just a funny little thing that happened today. You got to just go. So you do yourself a favor. If you found what I said, if you think it sounds like a funny premise, I promise it delivers. Just look up the New York Giants Twitter account. It's on there. And then underneath it, they posted the original video from the call from 10 years ago, Dan and Warwick. And then they posted the video they made today. It's just absolutely awesome sports radio content turned into comedy gold. All right, we'll see if Oren has some gold in his 5 Falcons true-false questions.
True or false, the Giants from San Francisco. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. We are going
to... You think they, like, go out to dinner to commemorate?
The fact that they're both called the Giants, the Giants from San Francisco.
I'm telling y'all, you got to watch it. The dude who's calling Dan is so deadpan. He's so serious about it.
What are you talking about?
And Mike's asking him all these follow-ups, and again, it's like he's just dodging punches left and right and just answering Mike in the most deadpan way. It's brilliant. It really is. It's brilliant.
Oh, man. All right. Let's turn our attention to the Falcons here, sir. Question number 1. True or false? Mike Bell and Carl Dukes today mentioned that DJ Shark did not look good, and they haven't heard a lot of positive things about him coming out of camp thus far. DJ Shark gets cut. True or false?
Yeah. I mean, if Mooney comes back and is ready to go and you have guys stepping up like Joe Patrick mentioned, Chris Blair.
And Casey Washington.
Who are just better than him at this point. Yeah. I mean, DJ Shark doesn't have enough of a reputation in the NFL to garner any special treatment. He had one good year. It was kind of like Mooney before he came to the Falcons. He had one good year. He had 1,000-yard receiving season early in his career, and he hasn't done anything since. He's been hurt, and he hasn't been able to catch on. So, yeah, it's pretty simple. He's not good enough to stay on the roster just because. There are guys on this roster that can contribute well above him. So, yeah, he gone.
All righty. Much has been made of the kicking battle between Lenny Craig and Younghoe Koo today. Craig missed a couple of kicks. All accounts is his kicks were a little bit wobbly, and Younghoe in not great conditions today, kicked the ball extremely well, making all of his field goals. True or false, Younghoe Koo returns back to form and misses 4 or less field goals on the season. True or false?
That is a very few amount to miss for 4 an entire season. But I think that tracks, right, as I'm pulling up his stats.
He was a 90% kicker, I think, 90% yeah. Accuracy.
He had the second best all-time behind Tucker before Tucker blanked the bed this year with everything he had going on. Let's see here. So he started full-time in 2020. I'm going to say, okay, so 37 for 39, 27 of 29, 32 of 37, 32 of 37. Yeah, so right around there.
Yeah, is his 4 or 5 misses per year if he's having a good year.
Yeah, I'm going to say he goes back to form. He was 25 of 34 in 2024.
Missed the most field goals in the NFL last year, this Falcons team.
Yikes.
So a return to form would be good.
Yeah, 4 to 4 or 5, yeah, I'm going to say true.
All right. Kobe Bryant. popular undrafted free agent
that's
of Kansas.
C-O-B-E-E, Brian.
Double E at the end. Starts with a C, ends with a double E. Picked off Kirk Cousins today during practice. Kobe Bryant is active for more than 10 games this season for the Falcons. True or false?
Ooh, true or false? I'm going to say false. There's a few bodies that are still ahead of him right now. You got your D. Alfords. You got your Clark Phillips. Obviously, the two starters in Hughes and Terrell. I'm going to say he plays, but I'm going to say he plays in more like maybe 5 or 6 or 7 games.
Okay. Do you have a time frame maybe at the end of the season, the middle
probably
of the season?
Probably more at the end of the season because corner's such an important position.
It is.
I mean, you can't just be throwing dudes out there. We saw what happened last year in the Denver game and in the Minnesota game. I mean, that was as embarrassing a performance by a secondary as you'll see. So I'm going to say false. I'm going to say he plays just not that much. That's a lot.
Okay. Jalen Walker returned to practice today. Looked like he was on a bit of a pitch count, but he returned to practice back today. True or false, Jalen Walker plays and is a starter week one. True or false?
Starter might be technical. I don't know if he's going to start, but he plays. Yeah, I don't think he's going to have – as long as he's good from here on out, I don't think we're going to see restrictions on him because he's got to catch up. He's got to be ready to go. So
yeah, give him some reps.
I think he's going to practice hard, and I think he'll play, and he'll be fine.
Hope you'll see him on Friday. It'd be nice if you saw him on Friday.
Oof.
Maybe we got another true or false question. Did we see Jalen Walker play in the first preseason game on Friday?
No. Nope.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
We're not. He doesn't play anybody who's even going to potentially have a big role. It's going to be J.D. Bertrand, and it's going to be Brandon Dorlis, and it's going to be maybe a Zach Harrison. Those are the types of guys I'm going to be on the lookout to see.
All right. Last one. We talked about Caleb McGarry getting that 2-year extension for $30 million. Joe Patrick called it a good value. True or false, this past year, Caleb was in the 70s from PFF for his pass blocking grade. Was 17th in run blocking, but in the 70s. I think he was 73rd in pass blocking. True or false, Caleb McGarry finishes in the top 50 this year in PFF's pass blocking grade.
What do I have to tell me that it's going to be true? That's the problem, right? He just hasn't shown it there. And it's not like he's a second-year player at this point. But he's got to be better. You know what? They rewarded him with the deal. Another year in Zach Robinson's system. No reason not to try to be positively optimistic here. We'll say true. He has a great year. As the quote-unquote not blindside protector, whatever they want to call it. I don't know why they're so against this at Flowery Branch, but they're really trying to make us understand from their perspective that Caleb is not a blindside protector. It's a all-encompassing offense here in Atlanta. All right. Speaking of offense, Casey Washington stopped by the Midday Show. Is he going to make the team? Is he going to be a guy that we could see step up while Mooney continues to rehab from his injury? All that and more coming up with the Falcons' second-year wide receiver, next. Ton of votes coming in on the poll at CT Tonight, 929 at CT Tonight, 929. Should either Michael Penix Jr. or Kirk Cousins play in the preseason? Just Penix, just Kirk? Both or neither? And right now, 53% of y'all are saying both need to get at least some run in the preseason. Interesting. So go vote if you haven't already at CT Tonight, 929. Before we let you hear from Casey Washington, who joined the Midday Show, I do want you to hear a couple of things from Bijan Robinson. He was on the Pivot podcast. And the first thing Bijan was talking about was offensive lineman Matthew Bergeron is starting to become one of the better guards in the league to go along with all-pro Chris Lindstrom.
Matthew Bergeron on offense, he's the left guard.
Mm-hmm.
Brother Monster.
Was he the one that was fighting all the time?
Yeah, he's probably in there. he's probably in there. But dude's a monster. Like, last year, he showed, you know, obviously Chris Lindstrom, he's the best guard in the league. But with him on the other side, like, man, he's starting to become real dominant. And even just talking with him and seeing his energy out there, I'm like, bro, like, you know, you got to kind of tone it down because you're killing these dudes out here. But
yeah, and that's what we've known Bergeron to be. And he's really grown into his own here and is becoming one of the better guards in his own right in the NFL. Bijan was also talking about the two rookies, Walker and Pierce, along with Divine Diablo, all new additions to the defense this year. Everybody's looking pretty good.
On defense, you know, I'm excited to see Jalen Walker. That dude, he a monster. James Pierce, monster. And I know these are rookies, but, like, they don't look like rookies right now, which is really impressive. Even Diablo, like, at linebacker, you know, I played against him last year at the Raiders. Yep. But this year, like, it might just be the scheme, but he looking good.
Well, he better. They brought him in to be a starter, essentially, and take over for Nate Landman and co. and try to be an upgrade there with a speedier, more athletic receiver. One more from Bijan, then we'll hear from Casey Washington. Bijan said, Darnell Mooney, he's a real one.
Darnell Mooney's real. Like, he is real. I don't know why he's so underrated. I don't know why. Because, you know, I think he's better than most in the league. Like, route running, making people miss, breaking people off, understanding the angles of routes, his catching ability, like.
Well, unfortunately, Bijan, he's underrated because he had Justin Fields as his quarterback in Chicago, and he was not very good. All right, now let's hear from Casey Washington, our potential new receiver. Hopefully, he continues his strong camp and has a good shot at making the team this season. Here he was on the middays with Andy and Randy.
Casey Washington, Falcons wide receiver, sits down with us. We haven't seen Casey since we broadcasted live from the Children's Hospital last December for a great event. Casey and all the rookies were out there with us that day. How are you?
I'm good. Good. Thanks for having me, y'all.
Yeah, man.
It's good
to see you.
Man. We appreciate you having us. And this is like my man Bunk said, that was last year, so it was your rookie year. So this is the second year. Second year training camp. How has it been different from that last year to this year for you?
It's been good. You know, coming off the rookie season and actually having that break after the season, that was night and day for me, just to be able to have that kind of mental decompress and get away from the game for a little bit. But, you know, getting back this year, being year two, I'm fired up. I'm ready to go.
Right. What do you feel like you know today that you didn't know a year ago?
I just think the perspective that you gain just from a year in the league, you know, seeing what vets are doing, having examples, great examples of guys that you can look at and learn from. You know, going into year two, you pick up on those things and it makes you even better.
How's it been for you? Because, you know, this thing is all about it's a year to year thing. You're always fighting for your spot, and you know this better than anybody. And when you look at this year as opposed to last year, because you, like, it's late round draft pick, but you were fighting and you were still here on a part of this football team. Coming into this year, you're getting more reps because of Moody's down. You got more reps last year because Moody's down. How are you taking advantage of those reps? Because, again, the opportunity is there. A lot of people don't grab that opportunity when it's in front of them.
For sure. I think most importantly, more than anything, just the work that you put in the offseason, when you're away from the facility. You know, when you finally get those opportunities, the work that you've done and the preparation that you've done, you're ready for the moment. I try not to force the opportunity when it comes and try to make things happen. Just trying to stay in that flow state of mind and kind of let it come to me.
Casey Washington joining us here on the Midday Show with Andy and Randy, Falcons wide receiver, live from training camp as practice, the on-field portion, has wrapped up today. When you talk about that off-season work, the physical stuff you're doing, obviously, I'm sure you're working out with whether it's former teammates or guys around the league, trainers, stuff like that. But then there's also the mental side of it, right? And maybe some film study as well. Like, what does all of that look like for you in an offseason for fans that have never done that have no idea what an offseason for an NFL wide receiver is like?
For sure. I think the biggest thing from college to the league is, you know, going through my first year, guys, and being in college, you have a plan that you're in the offseason. You have 8 weeks to do this. Right. You have a plan from 8 to 12, you got to do this. From 2 to 3, you do this. And when you're in the NFL, nobody's handing you a schedule to tell you what to do. So for this offseason, it was a lot of learning. You got to make your own schedule, and you got to do what works for you. But for me, it was just finding the things that work for me and finding the things that I need to work on too. So there was a lot of learning this offseason just to figure out what works for me. But, you know, it's fun to piece things together.
Tell us about your quarterback, because a lot of times last year you guys were together because he was not the starter yet. You guys were having more reps together with the young guys, the scout team and things like that. Talk to us about your quarterback and his development, because, again, you got more reps with him than any of them last year because of the fact that he wasn't the starting quarterback.
For sure. I think both of us, anytime we get out on the field, we're out there and, you know, we're trying to make the best out of it. So every time we get the opportunity to play together, it's like another snap. You know, we just fired up to be out here and to be playing.
How much do the position group, and obviously for you wide receivers, how much do you guys lean on each other during this time of year, this process of, hey, here's something I'm working on, or here's something I'm seeing. I don't know if you – hey, here's something I see with you. Like, how much do you guys bounce stuff off each other technique-wise and training-wise?
All the time, you know, we're talking about releases and, you know, watching each other on film. I watch Drake all the time on film, seeing what he's doing right, seeing how he's finessing things, how he's doing things. So really just, you know, by example, you know, things in the weight room, recovery. Jamal Agnew, he's been in the league for a minute. He's got, like, some yoga toe spacers. I was like, hey, yo, where'd you get those? So I just ordered some of those. They're like some toe spacers. So, you're learning new things every day.
What does that do?
I don't know, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
It, like, realigns your foot to the fascia to its natural state. Okay. Yeah.
My daughter has some for when she paints her toenails.
Kind of looks like
A little bit.
You know, tell me about you as far as, because, you know, a lot of times, a lot of guys, okay, I'm an X, I'm a Z, I'm a Y, I'm a this. But in your case, you have to learn all of them. How is that process going into year two as opposed to year one?
I'm just trying to take it one day at a time. You know, obviously, being able to digest the playbook over a year, I'm feeling more comfortable now than I felt before. But more than anything, just being confident when I'm out there and knowing that I belong.
Right.
That's the biggest thing for me, because when I'm playing free, when I'm just letting things happen, that's the best me. So I'm trying not to force anything. Obviously, the preparation and the work that I do will meet the opportunity.
Casey Washington joining us here on the Midday Show with Andy and Randy, fresh off the practice field. You said you watch a lot of tape of Drake. I've got some tape of Drake right here. You were probably standing right there. Coach Raheem Morris lined up on the other side of him, and he puts him on his backside. Our Falcons insider, Joe Patrick, got the video, and he's getting a lot of views on Twitter off this thing. When this happens, what's the reaction of the team?
I actually didn't see it. I heard Nick Nash was like, "Damn!" And then I saw Raheem getting off the ground trying to play it cool. I'm like, "Nah, he definitely just busted. He busted his ass for sure."
Yeah. You notice the guy who did it though. Yeah, but that's pretty damn funny.
Now,
I got a quick question for you, because I know you had the one grab last year. Did you get to keep the ball?
No, I didn't.
Did he get to keep the ball?
Didn't. No.
Oh, man, you got to find a way to get that football, man.
Well, because wasn't it Penix's first completion, too? His pass to you, I thought, was his first completion in the league also. Maybe not. I could be wrong about that, but I think it was.
I'm just saying, you got to get the ball, man.
No, I didn't get the ball, but I got my old teammate Devin Witherspoon's jersey after the game.
Okay, so that's cool. Yeah, okay, that's cool. That's
I got to
cool.
still find that ball, though.
Yeah, you got to figure out how to get that ball, man. And talk about that experience in Illinois, because it's the fluctuation and everything, but you guys were always tough. And then you got this big dude, this big loud dude as a head coach that just wants to beat people's face in. Like, how about that carryover from that kind of program to the league?
For sure. You know, playing for Coach B, he's all about structure. You know, he comes from Bill Belichick and the Patriots, and they do things a certain way. You know, smart, tough, dependable is something that I learned at Illinois. And, you know, being in that system for a couple years and learning from Coach B taught me a lot of discipline. So coming here and controlling the controllables and just staying intentional about what I can do and what I can control, I think is going to help me a lot.
We heard this morning that that Penix and Cousins both aren't going to be playing in the preseason game on Friday. I assume you'll be playing in the preseason game on Friday. I don't know if you're allowed to say that or not for sure, but what do you get from those experiences, those reps in a game situation versus what you're doing out here?
Anytime you get to play in a game, it's an opportunity to make plays. So I'm just going to go out there and try to make plays and The more plays I can make, the more confidence I'm going to give myself and everyone else in the locker room. So I look forward to those opportunities, and I'm excited to play.
Nervous or anxious?
You know, you always get those nerves. Like you expect as you get older for them to kind of go away, but they never really go away. But I think if you're nervous, you care about it.
Yeah, I think that's good, right? Like if you got numb to it, that probably wouldn't be a good thing. But we're looking forward to it. We can't wait to see you guys out there on Friday. And I know it's a preseason game, but still.
Ball is ball.
Yeah, football's football. And seeing you guys in the uniforms and at home taking on the Lions can be a lot of fun. Thank you.
Hell yeah. Appreciate
you, brother. Stay safe. Stay healthy, brother.
Yeah. Rise up.
KC Washington there. Nice enough to hang out with us here for a few minutes after practice. And
yeah, he's a guy that I got a chance to see him up close and personal last summer when I was still producing Dukes and Bell. And Oren, I know this sounds silly to say, dude looks like a football player. I mean, he's got the build, he's got the physique, he's got the swag. When you see him up close and personal, he's got those sticky hands. I think he has a future in this league. I really do. Something tells me just that. Y'all see this, by the way? Coach's poll out today. Where did UGA fall? We'll talk with our buddy Ian Valentino about that next of A to Z Sports. Does he think Georgia got jobbed? Because they were not number one. I'll tell you who was number one as well. All that more, a little college football conversation coming your way next. Ian Valentino joins me, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app. It is officially poll season for college football. Can you smell it? Can you feel it? Can you taste it? College football is coming, baby. And the top 25 coaches poll was put out via USA Today. And our buddies at On3 made a nice little graphic that I'm looking at right now. Couple of surprises, including where UGA lands. Let's welcome in our next guest, our good buddy Ian Valentino. You read him on A to Z Sports. Ian, let's start here. Texas at number one. I'm going to guess you were not surprised at that selection.
No, not too surprised. I don't know if that would have been my personal choice, but I get it, right? Like, they obviously bring back a lot. In terms of star power, familiar names, that type of thing, I think they ranked about 100th in terms of returning production from last year. So it's not like it's a veteran team, but it's familiar names. It's a coaching staff that you can put some trust in. Obviously, Arch Manning, there's a lot of intrigue there. And I do wonder how much of that week one matchup with Ohio State plays into that. You get a number one versus number two matchup. It's kind of like, well, we're going to find out either way if this is like really the best team or second best team in the nation pretty quickly.
I'm seeing a lot online about Ohio State getting too much love for simply doing what they did last year and maybe not being that same team coming in at number two.
Yeah, I get that too. You know, they lost a lot of guys, and especially on that offensive side of the ball, obviously losing both coordinators, they lost some really good assistants too. I get it. I think Penn State, if I were to have been a guessing man, or even a little bit of a betting man, I would have probably said Penn State maybe deserves that number two spot over them or even the number one spot overall just because of what they brought back. But I also understand it. I do think there should be some respect to the returning champs. I do think that they earned it. They beat a lot of the teams that they're ahead of, right? So there's somewhat of an argument there. I think that I'd rather see the returning champs get a little bit more love than not. I think that they've earned that benefit of the doubt. And like I said, we do find out pretty quickly what they're going to be made of. But, yeah, if you're going to make the talent and the proven stars, things like that, those type of arguments, you're not wrong. You've got Caleb Downs. You've got Jeremiah Smith. Everyone else is looking to prove themselves.
Penn State at number three. I don't think many are shocked about the Dogs here close to home. Ian, come in at number four. Do you feel like that was an appropriate ranking?
I do, yeah. That's a little bit of a respect earning there, too. Like, obviously, we know Kirby's going to have that team playing the best that they can. Last year in the playoffs with what happened to Carson Beck and a little bit thrown of a curveball there, it is what it is. Like, that team's going to be competitive. They're going to have the chance to win every single game this year. So it's hard to make the argument that anyone behind them is clearly better. I thought if you were going to, maybe you'd say Clemson because, you know, they're on the upswing, and we talked about that last time I was on, and maybe even LSU, they brought back a lot of guys. I think they were like about 40th or so in returning production. Compare that to Georgia, who was in the 80s. But look at where those programs have been over the last 10 years. Georgia's the best team in college football over that span, except for maybe the Nick Saban years of Alabama, right? So totally fine with it. If you would have put them three, I think it would have been fine too.
Notre Dame comes in at 5, Clemson 6, Oregon 7, no issues there. Alabama ahead of LSU at 8, LSU comes in at number 9. Interesting choice there, Ian.
That's the one I don't get. I think that's the one where I am truly scratching my head. Alabama has a little bit more coming back than LSU did, but that's not necessarily the indicator of anything, right? Like, where's the star power? You have Ryan Williams, and you've got some decent guys. It's not like it's a not talented team, but who was happy with Alabama's season last year? Who's coming into this year looking at Kalen DeBauer and that staff and thinking, you know what, those guys have it figured out in the SEC? I don't know anyone. And certainly LSU and Brian Kelly have their fair share of horrifying collapses over the course of a long time. But LSU brings back a lot of star power, a lot of headlining talent. I think that that does matter. You get a second-year starter, Garrett Nussmeier. They bring in a lot of guys from the portal. They've got Brian Kelly's last couple of recruiting classes, which have been very strong coming into their sophomore, junior years. That team should – now, the schedule, their schedule is really brutal. But Alabama, I just don't see the argument for it. If you told me that they went 9-4 again, I wouldn't be surprised. And I think that's an easier path to that than it is maybe 10 or 11, 12 wins, which is what you're kind of projecting them into, putting them over a couple of the teams that they're over.
Going over the most recent AP coaches poll rankings with our good buddy Ian Valentino of the A to Z Sports, the USA Today via On Three, the graphic I'm looking at here. All right, so if you move a little bit further down the line, actually, before I do that, this is why I got tripped up for a second. I was trying to pull my page back up here. Garrett Nussmeier, Ian, minus 150 to be the SEC passing yards leader over Blake Shapen over Miss State. You like that?
Yeah, I do. That's going to be a big play hunting team. Just like, I mean, I love his mindset. I think Nussmeier, it's big reward, big risk. Barrion Brown is a huge playmaker. He's one of the fastest guys in the nation. It's not like that LSU team lacked talent last year, but that receiving core wasn't the typical LSU receiving core. So now you got Chris Hilton in there. Obviously, you know, they bring in Nick Anderson. If he's going to stay healthy, that's a big if. But if he's healthy, he was a guy that was projected late first round, high second round guy a couple of years ago. So that is a very dynamic team. Obviously, in the background, too, their running back room is pretty impressive. A lot of firepower there. And I think the defense is okay, but the defense isn't good enough to where I'm saying that team's going to go be able to hold opponents to like 10 points a week. Like, it's going to be a shootout, a lot of those games. And look at that schedule. As I mentioned, they're going to have to be fighting and clawing for a lot of games. Now, Nussmeier might throw for 15 picks if he's throwing the ball that much. But, hey, if you're betting on guy leading the passing, leading the conference in passing, that's not a bad thing when you've got a wager on it.
Probably the most overvalued team on this list, I think I'm going to have to argue, Michigan at 14. Do you like them there? I think that's way too high.
Yeah, I'm with you. Great end of last season. Bryce Underwood's really intriguing. New offensive coordinator. You know, there's some good things there. But they lost almost all of their best players to the draft. I mean, the last 2 years have ravaged that team. It's not a roster that we could even recognize from 2 years ago. It's a coaching staff that's looking to prove themselves. When you're Sharon Moore, you have to make a new offensive coordinator hire. I'm not saying the guy's on the hot seat, but I do think that there is pressure on him, especially depending on what happens with their with the cheating scandal and how that plays out as far as punishment. There's going to be a lot of pressure on that situation, and especially with Mikey Keene being hurt, if Underwood has to play early, I think it's easier for them to trip up more often than not. And I think last year was maybe too far in the other direction, but I don't see a top 15 finish for that team. You're talking top 15, they're going to have to beat one of Penn State. They might beat Ohio State again. Who knows? I mean, they've got their number, but Oregon, like that, those are the type of wins that you have to log. And the Big Ten is pretty good this year. It's pretty deep. I like those middle tier teams. So for me, I look at them as maybe fringe top 25, but their season is next year. 2026 is that program's year. And I think this is going to be a bumpy year with a lot of new moving pieces.
The Vols come in at number 18 without Nico. You think that the quarterback room is good enough right now to sustain that ranking? Is one of the top 20 teams in the nation, minus a guy that was projected to be maybe a number one overall pick?
Yeah, they're interesting. I think they'll be fine because I like Nico's raw skill set. I think everyone does. But I think he was more part of the machine than he was the driver of it. Now, what he'll be this year and next year, I mean, at UCLA, it's hard to be super confident. But I tend to think that Josh Heupel has a situation where you can plug in a lot of somewhat decent guys. It's like Ole Miss with Lane Kiffin. If you have a guy that can just make most of the throws and can make good decisions, it's going to be a good offense. It's going to be powerful enough, but they're going to come up short against the elite teams. They just don't have the trench talent, especially this year, to really compete at the highest level. But the SEC ends up beating up on itself. I do think that team is worth that ranking. It's a bit of a shame that Nico's not there, because it's a really perfect opportunity for him to kind of step up and grow. That's just, I really wish that would have played out differently. And I think probably all parties probably would like a mulligan on that one. But I think the team's good enough. It's just the teams ahead of them, I think, are more proven. They have higher upsides. That's the biggest thing for me. It's not that Tennessee's not good, but like South Carolina, LSU, even Alabama, I just think that they have a bigger ceiling and higher ceiling they can reach.
One spot behind them, can Kurt Cignetti keep up his aggressive attitude, let's call it, and lead Indiana back to another successful top 20 season?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I love what he did last year. I thought this year in the portal did a great job. He got his top receiver back, too, from the NFL, Elijah Surratt. Keeping him in town, I think, was a huge win. Getting Fernando Mendoza from Cal, a lot of people don't know that guy. He might be the top quarterback in this year's draft. Got a ton of skills. I think he's better than, at least more talented than last year's starter. And so I think it's just a matter of putting all the pieces together and how he's built that team. That's tough. That's tough to continue to win from the transfer portal. I think that there does bring a little bit more risk to that as opposed to developing from within. But I respect him a lot. He's super aggressive. I think he knows what he needs and his teams to win. I like the attitude that he brings to the table. And I think he does, though, that I think they're clearly, to me, the fourth best Big Ten team. If they came in third over Oregon, I wouldn't be truly stunned. Because I do think Oregon at quarterback, that I'm more worried about their quarterback position than I am Indiana's, which is kind of weird to say.
Yeah, we'll wrap up with a couple of Texas teams here. A&M, again, the coaches poll top 25 via USA Today coming out today. We're looking at it, breaking it down with Ian Valentino of A to Z Sports. Texas A&M at 21. Does their big spending finally let them do something, for lack of a better phrase?
I don't know how you can bank on them. You know, I like Marcel Reed, of course. You know, he came out talking junk too within 15 seconds of him talking in the press conference. It was like a week ago, saying, yeah, like, I've heard the noise that I'm not a quarterback. You know, I'm just a runner. And I love that. Come out with that. And he hurt a lot of skeptics this last offseason. And his numbers were decent enough. The film was decent enough. But yeah, there's just a roadblock there. I don't know until they prove it. It's kind of like Miami for like that 10-year stretch where it's like the Joe, or even Texas, or, you know, are they finally back? I just got to see it, man. I got to see them get to the fringe of the playoff or even in the playoff before I can buy that team. There's something that is, there's just a major disconnect between the talent that they put out there and they recruit and then what they actually produce. And it's kind of mind-boggling that we've seen this happen time and time again over the course of several different program overhauls. I like Mike Elko, but we've never seen him do it at this level. So it's a great question. I would bank on no, just because that's been their program history.
All right. And finally, before I let you go, one of the more intriguing teams of the offseason because of the millions and millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars that they spent this offseason, Texas Tech earned themselves, with all of those millions, the number 24 spot. How do you like them?
I like them enough to win the conference. I could definitely see them win the conference. There's, you know, kind of talked about it with Indiana. It goes one way or another. It either really hits and it really works because the culture is not just built off of the millions and millions of oil money. If it's actually built around a foundation, and I think that McGuire is a good coach, what he was able to put together with kind of a Band-Aid and being thrown into that fire a bit, I think he's at least earned the respect to say, I think he can win the conference, because it's a little bit of a down year too. Getting David Bailey from Stanford was huge. I think that was a really big statement piece for them, but you know, it wasn't the strongest transfer portal. It's not like they went out and got all Big Ten guys to come out there. So they're banking on some development. They're banking on some guys making that talent jump. But I don't think it's a year where, like, you know, Colorado's not going to be very good. Kansas State, you know, some guys like that. Like, there's going to be enough competition to where it's going to be, you know, come down to moments. I think a couple of games here and there, but I would not rule them out. And I do think that the momentum that they're building if they do have a good season, that recruiting trail over the next year or two might be pretty insane, because they have a lot of ins right now because of that money that they're spending. I mean, we saw it already. They got a five-star committed for next year, and that's pretty legacy-defining for them in a short order.
Real quick, before I let you go, was there any glaring omissions on your part?
I don't think there was omissions. It's just like we said, like we kind of talked about, just kind of like the ranking of some teams, that it was, I thought there was a little bit more of a blue blood kind of bias there. And you wish that you didn't see that. I know coaches are going to do what they're going to do. Like, they all, you know, have their own agendas that they're going to push, and they're not necessarily watching a ton of other teams. So I was a little bit disappointed to see that. I do hope we can see, you know, just maybe even teams like Texas Tech. I mean, those are teams that I'd rather see get a little bit more optimism. I think that fringe, though, it's an odd year because there's not a lot of returning talent, and it feels like this whole field is wide open entering the season, which will be fun.
Ian, appreciate the time. As always, we'll chat soon, and pretty soon we'll be talking about the actual product on the field. Can't wait.
I can't wait either. Thanks so much.
All right, that is Ian Valentino of A2Z Sports, one of our regulars, one of my favorites to talk college ball with, breaking down the latest rankings for you here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. All right, coming up next, the Braves are playing the Brewers right now, so we're going to head out to Milwaukee. Welcome in Bart Winkler, who you hear after me most weeknights here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Also want to pick his brain on the Packers. I'm high on the Packers. But that division, man. Although, Oren, did you see Caleb Williams apparently had such a bad weekend to the point where they were like, enough, we're calling this practice, take your butt inside and think about what you've done, sir. Number one overall pick. We'll talk to Bart Winkler. Excited to do that next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app.